Okay.
So they were serious in upgrading the operating capability of all electrical equipment. Up to that point, most equipment had a top thermal rating of 105 degrees or Class A. And what they were interested in was a Class B wire insulation, and that's 130 degrees C continuous. And GE had literally pioneered the first Class A polymeric film insulation for wire, which was a standard around the world. And consequently, that's called Formex. But what they were most interested in was making sure that the first Class B wire enamel was also GE. Mm-hmm. So there was a great deal of pride riding on the fact that we had to win that one to get the first Class B wire enamel to be universally accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And the M&P laboratory was doing a lot of the testing of the wire for electrical applications, and consequently they had a vested interest in the wire program. So they sent me out as their representative to join the team at the research laboratory. And at the research laboratory, they had been through several generations, which hadn't quite made it. And when I arrived on the scene, the best thing they had was a glycerin glycol terephthalate polymer containing some drying oils, triglycerides. This product was made by a man named Maynard Eggens, who was a pretty prolific inventor of his own right. The problem they had with this material was that when they put it on wire, they apply it multi-coat, and they run the wire up through a heated oven, and they come back and put another coat on through a heated oven. And the rate at which they run through the ovens for a given size of wire is, let us say, 30 feet a minute. With the material they had when I arrived at the research laboratory, if they ran it at about 10 feet a minute or 7 feet a minute, they could attain all of the properties they wanted. But it would be at 1/3 to 1/4 the commercially acceptable speed.
Yes.
So the setting was, what can we do to speed up the processing of this particular thing? And what we did literally, or they did literally, was establish patterns where each of the ingredients was buried at one at a time over different ranges, or where necessary, one would go down, the other would go up. And they set up all kinds of statistical experiments to vary all of the ingredients. And when you come around to the drying oil content, this presents a lot of opportunities, because there are literally hundreds of different drying oils, which are linoleic and soy oil and corn oil and olive oil and any kind of vegetable oil that you can think of that might work. And everything had to be cooked and equilibrated together. I was given a fairly large number of polymers to synthesize. These things had two steps to them. First, you equilibrated the oil, first you made the base polymer bed, then you equilibrated the oil, and you put the two of them together and you cooked those and a few other things, and it took about a day to make one of them. And I had maybe 20 to go.
Have you ever made a polymer?
No, I learned how to do melt polymerization within a few days. Learned about catalysts and all the rest of stuff in a couple of days.
Did you have some particular mentor or something you were put under up there, or was there?
Yes. I had, my mentor was an early name of Frank Procopio, a Yale PhD, who was VP of AmChemical, which is in Philadelphia. They make a variety of solvents and things, but also herbicides, and they're now part of some outfit out in Minneapolis, I think. But he's got a pretty good job. He was a member. So, anyhow, I was faced with how do I make 20 of these compounds, one a day, and it gets kind of boring after a while. And the person who was doing the testing, I asked her, was Edie Boldebuck, and she was responsible for the preliminary evaluation of everything. And instead of making each one of these things individually and equilibrating the oil, you take a triglyceride and put glycol in and equilibrate it to a diglyceride, and then you instead of going to a diglyceride, then you put that in with a glycol and the glycerin and the stearic, or not stearic, but dimethyl terephthalate and equilibrate everything. I decided I would make a big batch of glycerin, glycol, terephthalate. A big master batch. Then all I need to do is add the oils and cook them a while. And that would cut down on a lot of steps. But when I made this big batch of material without any oil in it, it looked pretty much like the products that we were eventually making after the oil in it. So essentially, for the hell of it, I decided to submit a master batch without any oil.
Did you tell anybody?
I didn't tell anybody. And Edie Boldebuck checked it and literally came running to me and said, "The stuff is great. That's what we want. Well, what did you do?" that was the birth of a product called Alkanix. Had subsequently, was almost immediately commercialized and has been going, still being made and sold.
You just get a thermal cross linking.
Well, what you have to do is you have a thermal cross linking or branching, but you must run it short of cross linking and do the cross linking on the wire.
Right.
But up until that point, all theory said that if you have a polyester, it's cross-linked, it's brittle. And therefore, we must have oil. And this had some background in the original Gliptal varnishes and resin which we made, and adhesives. These were glycerol phthalate, essentially, and they were all brittle as the devil. Extremely brittle. And then I can't think of the name now, but I could. Henley was one of them that's available. they discovered that if you took our Gliptow varnish and Gliptow adhesive and stuff and put oil into it, vegetable oil, you got an oil modified Gliptow, and that was now rather tough and flexible, and that became the basis for the whole paint industry, the alkyd paint industry.
Mm-hmm.
GE claimed a little bit too much on that, and we lost the whole thing.
You couldn't protect.
We claimed the whole thing, and we owned the whole alkyd resin or alkyd paint business.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody contested and found out that we had claimed something that didn't work, and had the whole patent thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
Without the patent protection, you couldn't.
Without the patent protection, we continued to make alkyd paints, and we maybe still do. I don't know. I think we sold our paint plant in someplace in Western Mass. We sold that to somebody, and all the recipes and stuff. But we were a major factor in the alkyd paint business for a long time. But in any event, the teaching had been quite heavy. In order to get flexibility and toughness, you need oil.
Mm-hmm.
And that was based on a lot of experience of a lot of people. And at the research laboratory, everybody was convinced that we needed oil and or fatty acids in there. And so my first material, which was called incidentally DF53 for Danfoss 53rd experiment, was the product that became our commercial Alkinex.
Mm-hmm.
And I subsequently made DF54, 5, and 6, which were variations which, in my own opinion, were better. But from a commercial standpoint, they were happy with what they had, so they wanted to commercialize. In any event, we had a product that met all of our requirements, but one of the interesting things that came in was that when you heat a polymer in a closed system, so-called hermetically sealed, and you heat it up to 130 degrees centigrade or higher, there's always a little bit of moisture in it or a byproduct that comes off from further condensation. And we found that in sealed systems, our beautiful Class B wire enamel suffered some degradation. And consequently, we were having a session of how can we improve the resistance to hydrolysis of this polyester to make it even better. It's good enough, but how can we make it better?
This was after you'd done the getting the oil out?
After I got the oil out,
mm-hmm.
We had a product that we were ready to go to the market. I'd like to throw in one other name here. Probably the greatest person, inspiration I have worked with was a madman by the name of Abraham Lincoln Marshall. And Abe Marshall was a madman from the standpoint that he ran everywhere in a hurry. He was totally safety unconscious. He made commitments that people thought he shouldn't. Did all sorts of things, but I liked it because he really had courage of conviction. And he went out and sold this product, this Class B wire enamel, before we had it. Did a great job of selling it and told everybody we will have it, we will deliver, and everything else, and we hadn't invented it yet. So,
even before the F53 was.
Before the F53, he had sold it.
It wasn't a case that he knew the experimental results and the.
No, he just had confidence that our guys could do it. We certainly, our guys at that time, in the third class, reached the maximum of close to 30 professionals on the street.
Mm-hmm.
So he sold it, then he put these 30 guys on it.
Well, they were on it.
They were
he knew they were going to win. for he knew they would succeed. Yeah. But he had actually sold the stuff to our wire people and our motor people. They were waiting for it. So when we delivered, it was expected. But the DF-53 was delivered. Certainly, the patent on that is in Procopio and Fox name. We had this meeting, what can we do about improving the hydraulic stability? And that's when I remembered my wire crawl carbonate that I couldn't hydrolyze. So my immediate thought, if we could make a polymeric wire crawl carbonate, we would have a polyester that wouldn't hydrolyze. But you can't make a polymer out of wire crawl. You only make a coupler or a dimer. And what I needed was this wire crawl, where I had two wire crawls hooked together by a tail end, and then I could make a polymer out of it.
Of course, it's not a polyester anymore.
What?
It's going to be a polycarbonate.
It's a polycarbonate, but as far as I'm concerned, a polycarbonate is a polyester.
Okay.
Our patent people have argued successfully that they aren't.
Yeah.
Any chemist
would
argue that a polyester is a polyester. And in one case, it's a combination of a dihydroxy compound with a isotretinoic acid or a formic acid. Carbonic acid. They're both carbon acids. But anyhow, I started looking for some wire crawl carbonate. Again, there was none. Not wire crawl carbonate, but bisque wire crawl. And I couldn't find any. There wasn't any available in the catalog or anything else. And rather than look it up and try and figure out how to make it, I started looking for something that would serve as a functional model, if you will. And I tried hydroquinone. And hydroquinone, using a classic synthesis, which was a acid chloride, which is farcine and hydroquinone and caustic Schottenbaumer reaction. If you try this in water, you immediately get an insoluble precipitate. And you can't melt it, you can't dissolve it. And I tried resorcinol and I got sort of the same thing, but it was a little bit softer. And the next question is, where can I get another dihydroxy compound? And went checking and I found some bisphenol A. Took it off the shelf and ran the same experiment, but it was a real low polymer. And then I conceived the idea of making my wire coating with transesterification. Why don't I make the polycarbonate by transesterification? And I tried some bisphenol A with some dimethyl or diethyl carbonate. It didn't work with it then. And I tried catalysts and different things, didn't work. And then I got a hold of some diphenylcarbonate and put the two of them together and started heating. And when I got up to a couple hundred degrees C, I started getting a lot of phenol coming off. And the reaction went very well.
Better leaving group.
And I kept cooking it, and I reduced the pressure as I had with my wire coating and used the same traps and everything else, and kept taking back from the phenol off, and eventually, as I raised the temperature, I was up well over 300 degrees centigrade, and in fact, I was running out of thermometer, and the stirrer kept stalling, and I kept twisting it, and finally, it wouldn't stir anymore, and the thermometer was about all used. So I cut the reaction, pulled the thermometer, and let it cool down. And when I pulled the tomorrow out, I did pull a long fiber of the polymer out with it. And as it pulled down, it broke and shattered. And I left it sit for the rest of the day. Actually, I had one person came in, being a dorm sergeant, and he had worked for a couple of other companies besides GE and knew something about polymers, and he got was kind of impressed with the fiber, which I wasn't. And had one other interested bystander from the next lab of sensor that had me Bart Beakey come over. And what is it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. And will a fiber pull or draw? And I said, what do you mean draw? And he said, will you stretch? Oh.
Yeah.
He played with the fiber a little bit, and sergeant told us if we wrap it around a mandrel and let it sit in the morning, chances are it'll shatter, but if it doesn't, it might be interesting.
Yeah.
And we wrapped it around the mandrel, and let it sit the next day, and it hasn't shattered.
Mm-hmm.
Next day, we started trying to take the glass off of our mass of stuff on the end of the serve, and mm-hmm. we could break some of the glass off, but we couldn't get all the glass off because it was really stuck tight,
mm-hmm.
Welded literally. It would delaminate the flask, and all the stuff that was delaminated was stuck very tight
yeah.
to the thing. So we started trying to pound it with hammers to crack the glass off, and we couldn't crack the glass off. We just pulverized it, and didn't matter how hard you hit it, it would bounce or rebound. And so then we started just hitting it on the floor, and we did all sorts of things with it. But that was the original glob. But sat there. Well, some interesting things happened, and the regular BF-53 was being pushed real hard to go to market. They needed more experiments done with that, and flight variations and formulation stuff, so everybody was still hung up trying to get that thing going. And I really had to told I had to leave the polycarbonate sit for a while until we got the wire enamel out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sat for almost a month, or maybe 2 months.
When you say leave it aside, was that because most people were really aware that here was something that was worth exploring?
I would say that everybody said that that's something we'll get back and work on after we get this wire enamel, which is much more critical problem. Incidentally, some of the people that were involved in that moldy effort on the Alchemax were pretty well-known people. One of them was that I'd consulted with on solubility stuff, and I mean, Tracy Hall, who had the diamond. And Bruno Zim was consulting with us on it, and Glenn Russell was consulting, and Fraser Price was consulting, and
was Russell still at GE when you were there?
Frank Mayo was there.
Uh-huh.
I got advice from him, or tried to get advice from him, mm-hmm. It wasn't very useful on the polycarbonate subsequently.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a pretty much of a who's who in the field of polymers there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But Obeki was there, and having a Dewhurst was there, the later succeed Obeki. Well, another one that was very interesting was Jan St. Pierre, who you probably know from McGill.
Yeah.
And, the guy named Bob Luke had just come in. He may have retired, I don't know, really though. I think St. Pierre was in the same office. And he had one of Charlie Price's students that had made the polyethylene glycol carbohydrate polymers first.
Were you beginning to get a feel for yourself as
really interested in polymer
chemistry? I'd say I became interested in polymer chemistry.
Yeah.
From that whole course at the research lab lasted about 6 months.
Uh-huh.
But that was a very, very, say, a good 6 months.
But when you
from the people that I rubbed elbows with and the things I learned became very, I learned a lot, but I'm still applying from some of my associations.
You're describing it as a course, though. Was it really a course?
No,
or
there was
more
no
of
course.
It was time and an experience.
It was a time and experience,
yeah.
And actually the man who sent me there, Ed Flynn, really sent me there with a purpose in mind that the function of the M&P laboratories was to provide material consultation to the electrical components. And in order to provide consultation, you had to know something. And one of the best things to know, if you don't know all the facts, is to know people who do know. And that was the reason to go to the research laboratory, to become acquainted with all of these people, so that when somebody asked me a question, I could always say, I'm tied up now, can I call you back in a short while? And then you hang up and call somebody else and find out what the answer is, and then you call them back. It's all consultation. So this was really an orientation type program, and a lot of people, for example, Zavitz did a tour at the research laboratory, and a few others did tours there, and this was a good basic orientation period in my case, polymer.
Yeah. Did you learn a lot about physical methods while you were there? Did you know what a glass transition was?
No. Very little.
Yeah.
I learned about glass transition temperatures and TMs and stuff later.
So you're really still playing organic chemist?
I was a plain organic chemist.
Yeah. Yeah.
That man reaction of both ends of a molecule has changed. But anyhow, I went back down to the Turbine Lab after my 6 month stint and kept playing the polycarbonates on the side. And my boss let me just play. I got involved in some other things, got involved in more varnishes and insulation and things of that sort. Got into foundry resins and developed some pretty useful furfural alcohol core binding resins and things of that sort. Always in polymers.
So you didn't mind the fact that you had to leave this sort of hoo-hoo of polymers and go back to the M&P lab, which is more of a
background. Well, I would like to say that I was a little bit glad to get away from it.
Well, why do you say that?
Because they didn't do anything in a hurry at the research laboratory. It upset me. I had some personal things. One, that DF-53, the guy named Bill Gillum was running the evaluation down the main plant on the full wire house, sent some of that stuff down to him, and he proclaimed it as being excellent, but the viscosity was too low. He increased the viscosity a bit, so it doesn't run so much. So I said, yes, and that was on a, maybe a Friday afternoon I heard that. So I spent all Friday afternoon and Friday evening, night, making the damn stuff and went out and worked it up on Saturday. And he told me to get the viscosity checked. I turned the viscosity thing into the analytical section for analysis, needed a viscosity, and they said we only run viscosities on Tuesday. So I waited for Tuesday and I said, well, what did you get? And they said, well, we only run 6 samples a week and yours was the 7th sample. We'll get it next Tuesday. At that time, I was ready to leave. What the hell kind of efficient operation is that? And I guess I was not cut out for the leisurely pace that the people read around the place. Everybody hurry up and get to lunch before noon so you can see the new movie. I wasn't used to some of the things, and I liked the pace better where you were more of an individual down at the turbine lab.
Well, that's very interesting. You were more of an individual down at the turbine lab than in research, which is kind of counter to the normal perception.
I could call my own play.
Mm-hmm.
And I eventually end up with people who are acting as personal consultants to provide the information, whereas the research laboratory was just a little bit more leisurely than...
Too academic.
It's only one other guy was a key factor in that wire coding, was a friend named John and Jack Elliott, who ended up for a long time with Loctite.
Did Al Pachukas figure into this?
Al came in later.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get to that.
Okay.
What happened while I was still at the research laboratory? No, after I went back. After I went back down the turbine lab, Al Pachukas was the manager of R&D here for the newly created chemical development operation in Pittsfield. The chemical development operation was created for the express purpose of starting new chemical businesses.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, they had a project going on some cellulosic isolation process, and they had a